Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, June the 29th. And welcome to our commentary. One more day, and the month of June is history. And the first half of 2022 is history. I don't know about you, but I think this year is going by very fast. I've said that before, but it is amazing to me. It seems like it was only yesterday that we were waking up on the first day of January. But here we are, the 29th of June. And I want to before I get going, I want to remind you that I have a post over at the American Thinker this morning called 51 Reasons for Mayorkas to Resign. I'm talking about Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas. And he needs to resign after this last horrible tragedy of 51 people found dead. And the number could increase. I hate to say it, but the number could increase because there were 100 people in that trailer. And there are many in the hospital right now in very bad shape. So it could be more than 51 by the time the story is over. But the reason this is happening is because Secretary Mayorkas and the Biden administration have opened up the border. And they basically have created a path for human smuggling. I mean, the business of human smuggling is doing quite well under the Biden administration. This should not be happening. If we had a president who actually enforced the immigration laws and a president who would treat the border like what it is, the border of a country, this would not be happening. It certainly wouldn't be happening at the levels that it's happening. I mean, you're always going to have human smuggling. You're always going to have people trying to cross the border. That always is there, but not like we're seeing now. And we're seeing it now because of the leadership failure of Secretary Mayorkas and the Biden administration. Obviously, President Biden is not going to resign. So I think the secretary should resign and move forward because this is a disgrace. So check out my article over at the American Thinker, 51 Reasons Why Mayorkas Should Resign. Secretary Mayorkas should resign. Let's take a little bit, a look at the politics. There's a lot of talk, a lot of speculation, really, as to what the impact of overturning Roe v. Wade is going to have in our politics. And I think it's too early to tell, because I believe this is going to be a bigger issue in 2024 than in 2022, for the simple reason that we don't have enough time between now and November to actually navigate through these waters yet. We're going to eventually, I think, know a lot more about this. I happen to believe, for example, that Governor Abbott should call for a legislative session, a special session here in Texas to clarify the issue, because Texas, like many other states, has what they call trigger laws. And in our case, the trigger law says that we go back to whatever it was before Roe. Well, that's 1973, and a lot of things have happened since. So I would be in favor of saying, let's have a legislative session, a special legislative session, for the purpose of coming up with a post-Roe, Roe v. Wade, I mean, law, abortion law here in Texas. We already have the heartbeat law, so I would be content holding on to that, but I think it would be a good idea to clarify it. So that's why I think this issue of overturning Roe is going to be a bigger issue in 2024 when it's a presidential year. I don't think it's going to matter that much this year, but nevertheless, it is a topic. But I just don't think it's going to have much of an impact, because I think if abortion is the only reason that you're going to vote, you were probably going to vote Democrat anyway, as well as on the other side, you were going to vote Republican anyway. I just don't see a lot of people crossing over. That's my point, because of this particular decision. But here's a couple of bits of information that I found very interesting, because there have been all kinds of polls, you know, these overnight polls, and I'm always skeptical of those. But the Rasmussen reports came out today with their poll. Now, remember this, very important. By the way, I want to say hello to my friend who just said hello to me in one of the comments. Thank you for joining us. But Rasmussen, the reason that I like Rasmussen is because they do their poll with likely voters, meaning people who are going to vote. And also, they do a very large sample usually. They usually have the largest samples of all of the agencies who do polls. And their number this morning says that 50% of the people that they polled are okay with overturning Roe v. Wade, 50%. So that's a pretty good, I mean, to me, that's a pretty good number if you are, like me, a supporter of overturning Roe v. Wade. So that, I think, tells me that it's going to be at best neutral. Not one side is going to win or lose because of it. So I just don't see it having a big impact in 2022 because of other issues that are tearing up the country, like the inflation, the cost of living, the cost of gasoline. Have you tried to put gas lately? You know, I have this little Ford Focus, a wonderful little car. I've had it for a long time. It's one of the two cars that we drive in our family. And usually I drive it. I don't drive a lot. Usually go to and from the college where I teach in the evenings, and that's about as much as I drive. So I fill it up maybe once every 2.5 weeks. So it's not a car that I drive a lot. I just filled it up last night and I put 10 gallons and it was like $47. I mean, my goodness, that's not territory that I'm accustomed to, but that's what people are paying. And I also read, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, that people are cutting back on driving, which is maybe the reason why the prices have stabilized a little bit. People are just not driving as much, or they're, you know, I also read that many people will put $10 in, $20 in, and they sort of partially fill up their tanks rather than, you know, filling up at one time like most people do. So it, to me, those are the issues really impacting the country right now, the economic issues. That's what's really driving the 22 elections. And that's why I just don't think Roe v. Wade or overturning Roe v. Wade is going to make that big of a difference. Let's talk a little bit about, I have a post coming out tomorrow where I talk about how certain blue state Democrat senators are protecting themselves against what they believe will be a red wave in November. One of the things that I think people don't understand is that when you have a wave, like we've had waves like this before, you know, 1994, 2010, those were Republican waves. Probably 2018 was partially a Democrat wave. The Republicans kept the Senate, so it wasn't a total wave, but clearly in the House, it was a Democrat wave. When you have a wave, anything could happen. Because basically, you know, it's just like a tsunami. You know, you don't know how much damage it's going to do, and you don't know who's vulnerable and who's not. Or it's like a major earthquake. You don't know what buildings are going to collapse or not. You may think your building is well prepared for an earthquake, but then all of a sudden you find out it isn't. And that's sort of the way it is with a wave. You know, you got all that water coming in or all that damage, and you don't really know. So some blue state Democrats, like in Washington State and in Colorado, they're sort of preparing themselves by, you know, advertising a lot and getting ready just in case. We saw what happened in New Jersey last November. The Democrats didn't pay attention. The governor thought he was going to win by 10 points. Well, he ended up winning by 1 point, and a bunch of state Democrats went down in the election because of the Republican wave. You know, when you have a wave, nobody's safe unless you represent a super, super, super safe district. That's about the only people who survive. Again, it works both ways, whatever party is on the receiving end of the wave. So a lot of blue state Democrats in Colorado and in the state of Washington, a couple of them, are kind of getting ready for this. They're getting ready and preparing themselves with more advertising and sort of treating this as a very special election. And you cannot blame them. You cannot blame them. After what we just saw in South Texas, where you had this massive shift to the GOP, or again, what we saw in New Jersey in November, where it was that was a shocker for most Democrats. It was a shocker to me. I had no idea that it was going to be like that. I wasn't even paying attention to New Jersey because everybody was talking about Virginia. And here comes, here comes New Jersey, and, you know, they got the numbers on the screen and everybody's saying, what's going on in New Jersey? Well, I'll tell you what's going on. That's what happens when you have a wave. So some blue state Democrats out there are getting ready, and you cannot blame them. You cannot blame them because a wave is, as they say, very unpredictable. You know, there was a young lady who appeared before the January 6th committee, saying that she never saw Trump doing this, but she heard from somebody who heard from somebody. You know, it's the classic, you know, Tommy told me and somebody told Mary and somebody told, I mean, it's the classic hearsay scenario. So she went in there with a story about President Trump, you know, trying to take the wheels of the presidential car from the Secret Service and so on. Well, it was a great story. It was a fantastic story. I mean, the media was going crazy. All the anti-Trumpies were going crazy. And then we find out that two Secret Service agents are now willing to testify to say that didn't happen. That didn't happen. That just did not happen. And then, of course, you know, what is the committee going to do? I guess they're going to have to listen to them. But I think the moral of the story is people who hate Trump, and you have every right to hate Trump. I really don't care if you do. But don't hate Trump so much that you're willing to buy every single story that you hear about him. Because you could find yourself in this situation where you are promoting a story that turns out to be false. And then you end up worse than you look right now. So if Trump is living rent-free in your head, which is, I think, the case of many of these Democrats and, unfortunately, some people in the media, you may want to just count to 10 before you go out there and say something about Trump, because it may not be true, as apparently we're finding out with this allegation that Trump wanted to grab the wheel and drive himself on the presidential in the presidential car. I mean, that sounds so crazy. That is absolutely crazy. When I first heard about it, I said, oh, come on, that's crazy. Well, I guess. And now you have a bunch of people who are very embarrassed, particularly in this January 6th committee, because they were telling us that they had something, you know, they had canceled meetings for a while. And then all of a sudden they came up yesterday and saying, we've got some breaking story, something brand new. Well, it didn't turn out that way. It did not turn out that way. In fact, I think a lot of those people on that committee are going to have egg on their faces when those two Secret Service agents testify. On this day in history, 1974, here's our closing thought. You may remember a person in Argentina, a lady in Argentina named Evita Perón. They made a movie about her. In fact, they made a Broadway show about her, very popular. Well, Evita Perón was the first lady of Argentina. Her husband, Juan Perón, was president of Argentina in the late 40s, early 50s. And she became probably the most popular woman in Argentina's history. She was a very pretty woman, very elegant woman, very well with the people of Argentina. And, you know, the lady was an absolute success with the people of Argentina. She died very young, though. In the early 1950s, she was 33 years old. She passed away. I'm not exactly sure of what. So, again, the story goes from Evita Perón to 1974, Isabel Perón. Turns out that Juan Perón married for the second time. And he married a lady named Isabel Perón. And on this day in 1974, she became president of Argentina. Because he couldn't run again, I guess. He couldn't get reelected or whatever. So he did something there in the Constitution. And he was no longer president. Then he put his wife, Isabel, as president. I think, in all fairness, I think she was vice president before she became president. But anyway, Isabel Perón became the president of Argentina. I think she became the first woman in Latin American history to be president. She didn't last very long because the country had all kinds of problems, and she just didn't last that long as president of Argentina. But Isabel Perón, on June 29th, 1974, became president of Argentina, became the first woman president of a Latin American country. So there's a little trivia for you. You talk about Perón. There were actually two ladies Perón. Evita, the big famous, the big popular one they made a Broadway show about, and Isabel, the second wife, who eventually became president of Argentina. So there's your trivia question. The next time you have a conversation with a friend from Argentina. Thank you for watching. Thanks to many of you for commenting on the site here. Sometimes they come up so fast I don't have a chance to read them. I read them later. But thank you for your comments. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. and have a wonderful day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and the month of June is almost gone. Bye-bye, everybody.